From the New York City area, welcome to the Badass Counseling Show, where the master badass himself, Sven Erlandsson, takes you deep and gives balm for the soul, baby.
We're here. Welcome, badasses. It's great to have you here. Tuning into yet another episode of the Badass Counseling Show. This is a counseling episode today, and we've got a couple of great guests here. I am joined in studio, and I want to tell you who by, but after I say hello to those of you tuning in from as far away as Soweto and my home country, my people, Sweden, from Newfoundland to New Hampshire. It's great to have everyone here. I'm joined in studio, as I said, by KC over in the booth, and Rob the Rocket. Rob, what's the good word?
I'm in the booth with KC.
You're not really in the booth.
Yeah, all right.
He's near me, but Rob, we have two guests today, and we're not going to mix them. We're going to take them separately, and as you and KC recommended, we do. So please tell us first about Reggie.
Okay, Sven. Reggie wrote into us and said, "Hi, Sven. My dad is a pastor, and I grew up steeped in conservative Christianity. In my mid-30s, I left Christianity. I have expressed to my parents how I feel rejection of my new beliefs and values, but they have a point. I have also rejected them and what they believe and value. I know they love and would do anything for me, but I still struggle with the rejection I have felt all my life for valuing things contrary to their religious system. And I don't know how to disagree that I am also rejecting them."
Reggie, great to have you on the show.
Thanks so much.
You bet. I just want to get some of the language clear. You said, "I have also rejected them and what they believe and value." And then at the end you say, "and I don't know how to disagree that I am also rejecting them." So I guess the clarification I want is, are you rejecting them as people?
No, not as people. In as so far as to say, I'm not rejecting them, but I am rejecting their beliefs. And I do believe the system I grew up in has caused, detriment to my life.
Fair enough. Okay. And yet, if their dad is a pastor, my father was a pastor, I was a pastor, my son is the son of a pastor. And so let me ask you this. You said that I still struggle with rejection I have felt all my life for valuing things contrary to their religious beliefs. How was that rejection, when you rejected things contrary to their religious system, how were you rejected by them?
I think the whole culture in which I grew up was completely controlled. And I didn't feel the control. I didn't notice it because it was all consuming. So it was, this is the way things are done. And so there really wasn't an option to do otherwise.
Was that true in your home as well? You said, "I still struggle with the rejection I have felt all my life for valuing things contrary to their religious system." I asked you, how did they execute that rejection of you? And you talk about the controlling culture. So now we shifted. The question was about your parents and you shifted to the culture. And I'm not disputing that you object to the culture and it was a controlling culture. If you say it, I believe you. How did they reject your rejection of their religious system? Did they say, you're a piece of shit? What the fuck's your problem, kid? Or
No. It's very much like, God hates this behavior. This is not what God wants. This is how we act. This is how we do things. This is the good. Anything else is what people do, but it's wrong in the eyes of God.
Okay. For absolute clarity's sake, that was spoken in your home, not just across the street at the church, not just in Sunday school, that your parents actually said these words to you in your home.
Yes, yes. Okay. All-consuming, pervasive culture.
Got
home,
it.
Church, everywhere.
Got it. Is it they would only employ sort of the God card, God says these behaviors are bad, God hates this, God hates that. Would they only do that when you were expressly saying, I disagree that, I'm just going to make one up. You said conservative Christianity. I disagree that Jesus was dead for 3 days and came back to life. Was it only on theological issues or was it your behavior? Like, you just made out with your girlfriend and squeezed her butt. And God doesn't agree with that. And God says that's bad behavior. In other words, was it just on theology or was it on, just your everyday sort of shit that a kid does?
Behavior. And I guess in growing up, it was a lot to do with sexuality. with that. I mean, it was, I didn't even date until after high school because of the Christian culture. And so I didn't really have an outlet for that sexuality. It was like, you date to marry and that's it.
And safe to say masturbation was bad as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that's just it. It's like, well, you know, if I can't date, I mean, if you're a 13-year-old boy, you got enough testosterone to kill a horse, you know, and the energy and so forth. And if you're not allowed to get it out. And so I don't know if you ever got caught, so to speak, or were shamed for that, but that could feed into that as well.
Yeah.
Very
much so.
Okay. So, and so just so I'm clear, they wouldn't necessarily say, you actually made the phrase or you use the term several times, God doesn't like, or God this, or God that. It wasn't the Bible says, or in church they teach. It was, they were literally speaking for God.
There was no differentiation between any of that. Church, Bible, God, all the same.
Ugh. The whole presuming to speak for God thing is just like, eesh.
Yeah.
Okay, and so you felt judged your entire life by the religion and by your parents themselves, correct?
Correct.
What's the underlying message being sent to the child about that child, about who, the God stuff aside, or maybe that weaves in there, I mean, obviously it weaves in there, but what was the message you got about yourself?
Unless you act this way, you're hated by God. Even though he loves you, he hates you, and so that I'm only really good at good if I act how they believe action should be.
And you just brought in the hated by God. Now that's a fascinating little fucking phrase all by itself. That a loving God hates you if you're doing things that mom and dad say are bad. The message then that you got about you personally, not a general message about doing what's good and what's right, but the message you got about yourself, or let me ask it this way. When you were growing up, what did you believe about yourself?
That I was good, smart, intelligent, but innately flawed because I couldn't stop lusting. And I liked and enjoyed violence. And violent things.
When you're saying I enjoyed violent things, what are we talking about? You like to watch MMA? Or is it that, yeah, you know, you beat the shit out of every kid in school, or what are we talking about here?
No, I like the idea of shooting, sports, MMA, martial arts, that kind of thing. I've never been in a real fight, just lots of training.
Sure.
Fights.
Sure. Well, person well-trained doesn't have to get in a fight. Hopefully they don't. They learn the discipline. You know, it's very funny you bring this up, though. When I was in junior high school, as I said, my dad was a pastor and mom was director of Christian education. I'm the youngest of six kids. And I was really into two things in high school at the library. I would bring home books and books about two things. One, Hiroshima. I was fascinated by Hiroshima. Now, this is the 70s, so we're only 30 years removed from you know, that happening. That would be like today, that'd be like 1992, whatever the hell happened in 92, like the wall came down, and that was 87, 89, whatever. Point is this, I was fascinated by Hiroshima and the mob. I read so many books on the mafia, and my dad actually, you know, he never criticized me. He never, ever, ever criticized me or any of his kids, to my knowledge, but he said, why don't you read more like good books and stuff like that? And I mean, I went to, you know, confirmation. I went to church all the time and so on and so forth. And I liked church, right? I didn't necessarily agree with everything, but you know. But anyway, you got the message then that you are innately flawed and you're flawed because you were, you know, you had lust and you liked violence. And so let me ask you this. What do you believe about yourself today?
It's a good question. That I've been messed up and there is nothing wrong with me innately, but I've gone through some shit and trying to find my way back to myself and believe that I'm good and okay. But it's hard.
Well, other than the messaging, well, that implies if it's hard, and yes, it is hard, but if it's hard, that says that there is an entrenchment of belief inside of you that you're fucked. You suck. You're bad. You're a bad boy. You're unlovable or unlikable. There's some derivative of those messages in there. Let me ask you, you state there is nothing wrong with me, and yet you basically state, but I have trouble sort of believing that.
Right.
Right. So the whole issue, though, that you presented was this rift between the parents that you have in your life sort of rejected their belief system. I got to believe that you're wanting their acceptance. Isn't that what this is really about? You want their acceptance of who you are, what you believe, and who you are as a man, right?
I'd love that, or be able to accept myself without it. Either one.
Well, and that's interesting, because that implies, and I was actually going there, the notion that I need their acceptance before I can accept myself. I need something from them to confirm my worth. Or I need to confirm it myself, which implies, and this is a pattern I see all the time, that someone is in counseling with me and we dig down, and they're holding on to the parent, maybe it's father, maybe it's mother, maybe it's the grandmother who raised them, whatever. And it's like the parent or parental figure just keeps criticizing the fuck out of them, or rejecting them, or keeping them at the bottom of the food chain in the family. You know, there's sort of the family shit stick or whatever. And I always tell my clients, it's like, yet you keep going back to them. It's like you're holding on to your parents' collar and they're just fucking pounding you in the face. And you're like, why do they keep pounding me in the face? And I say, why do you keep holding on to their collar? Now that's the question. Why do I keep holding on to their collar? I keep holding on to their collar because I want something, or I fear something, or both. And what you just admitted is, I want them to accept me. Or at the very least, then if not, then I need to figure out a way to accept myself, which implies that there's something inside of you that is causing you to not accept yourself. Either that, or you just think you're completely unacceptable. And what we know is you were taught that you are unacceptable the way you are, and not just mom and dad don't like how you act. God hates you. God hates you. And dad, as the voice of God, I mean, in your parish, you know, he's the fucking vicar of Christ. We'll go a little papist there, but that he speaks for God. So if God hates you, presumably then if dad does what God says, then dad hates you. But you say your dad loves you. I mean, he said, if you do this, if you don't do good stuff, you are hated by God. Well, is your dad going to say, hey, God, no, you're wrong. He's not hateable. Even if you hate him, I don't. He's going to say, fuck you to God? No. Your old man works for God. He says it all the time. Hell, I speak for God. God hates that, therefore I hate it. God hates you if you're bad, therefore I hate you. Now, if I'm wrong on that, I need you to tell me. I don't mind being wrong. What am I getting wrong there? I mean, haven't you felt basically rejected/hated? Or haven't you?
Yes. Yes. And it's the truth. It's not the full truth. He's a big fan of the love the sinner, hate the sin kind of thing, but it feels like these are parts of me. So if you can't love all of me, you're not loving me, or you're not accepting me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and that's true. Yes and no. Let me push back on
yes
that.
Yes and no.
Let me push back on that. All right. So my girlfriend comes from a big fucking Italian family in the Bronx, right? And, you know, they're all loud and talking like you imagine. I mean, they're right out of fucking Bronx Tale or fucking Sopranos. I mean, it's like that. And I'm a loud person, but I come from a very quiet family, Swedish Minnesotans. You know, they're all quiet, wonderful people, but almost all of them are quiet. When I get around my girlfriend in particular, it's just like she tends to talk over people sometimes, me. And I'm like, honey, that's not conversation. She says, it's just conversation. We're having conversation. You know, and they all talk over each other. It's like, that's not conversation. That's just people randomly talking and no one's listening. Frustrates the fuck out of me, right? And so do I accept that side of her? Do I like it? No, I don't. I really don't like it. And because it makes me feel unheard, unlistened to, and hence not matter. But do I love her? Yes. Do I accept her? Yes. Do I accept that this is one of the things that she sees it's important for me? And so she does. She has changed massively over the years. And there have been one or two things where I've changed for her because it was important to her. Do I, and that's huge for me. I grew up with a mother who was a professional listener, suicide prevention, counseling people, doing what I do basically for decades, a powerful listener. So for me to not feel heard, it hurts me. That's a grievous offense of me as a person. And so, but do I still accept her as a person? So do I accept the totality of who she is? Yes, because I love most of who she is. That particular thing, I don't love. It drives me bonkers, right? But we're talking about something very deep and very significant. Your father and your mother have made a life out of this, and it's very deep and significant. So for you to reject their beliefs, they take it as a personal rejection. And yet you say, they love me and would do anything for me. Obviously, they wouldn't do anything for you. And that is to just fucking, why don't we all just put our religious beliefs to the side? And, you know,
they can't. Yeah, that's not happening.
Exactly. So then what you are being forced to face is, do I choose me or do I choose them? Because you just said they can't. And you said a minute ago, this is just organic to who I am. You didn't use the word organic, but this is who I am.
Yeah.
So you've got two parties and no one's going to give an inch. And what we're seeing, and there's certainly, I mean, y'all say you're Christians, so we know there's plenty of biblical precedent for families splitting over disagreement, over opposing beliefs.
Yeah.
If they're not going to change and you've wanted their acceptance, you, unfortunately, it sounds like, and I could be wrong, but it sounds like you're being faced with the fact that I may have to either have some sort of relationship where we don't talk values or whatever, stay in a relationship with them where they openly reject me and tell me that God hates me. And if Dad works for God, then presumably on some level, he hates me or at least rejects who I am. And either you're okay with that or you're not okay with that. Well, you stated you're not okay with that. And the truth is, fucked up as this sounds, you walking away from your parents and saying, this is who I am. And I understand you can't accept me. And this is just who I am. And I still love you guys. But if you reject me, you reject me. I got to get on with my life because I want to fucking be happy.
Uh-huh.
And let me ask you, when I say that, what do you feel?
How?
How what? Do you live with your parents?
No. How do I move on?
What would be the hardest thing to let go of in moving on?
I guess, how do I find that acceptance within myself?
And what's the biggest thing you reject about yourself? What's the biggest thing you dislike most about yourself?
I think I like myself a lot, but I don't feel accepted by others, particularly women, and it's played out in relationships pretty poorly. I'm seeking the validation I should have gotten from my parents with them, and it comes out with me being needy in relationships and falling in love way too fast, and I can't do that. I can't repeat that behavior anymore. And how do I just be okay not getting that and just finding it within myself?
Right. Right.
And acceptance from others.
Right. And that's what we try to do in life, is we try to get that validation, that acceptance from others, because we innately dislike ourselves. We've been conditioned to believe that I am bad, innately flawed, whatever. So you can say on the theoretical level, gee, I know there's nothing wrong with me, but you don't believe it. Because you were taught to believe something else.
Yeah.
Now, if you listen to my show, which I know you do, you've maybe heard me talk about a conversation I once had with my sister-in-law, my brother's wife, and she's been a neonatal nurse for decades, like 35 years, whatever. I mean, preemies that are smaller than, you know, the palm of your hand, or their heart is born outside their body, or they have a, you know, vestigial tail, or it's conjoined twins, whatever. And I've asked her before, I said, you know, how many children out of all the children that you have tended to, these itty little bitty bitty babies, how many babies in your career over all those years were born bad? She looked at me and she says, you're a fucking idiot. What the fuck does that even mean? How many children are born bad? That's just dumb. Don't sugarcoat it, Amy. She says, no baby is born bad. My dad, pastor, used to say, God don't make no junk. No baby is born bad. And yet here you are at, how old are you?
38.
Here you are at 38 and you believe, you're seeking something to validate you, which means you have an internal invalidating voice. In other words, you believe there's something invalid about you, bad. Just in simplest terms, you believe that you are bad, unlovable, unwantable, not good enough. There's some message in there that basically revolves around bad. And yet you weren't born that way. So if we stay in the whole God system, which I haven't asked you if you believe or not, but let's fuck it. That's what you grew up with. In the God system is saying you were born bad. Or the God system, what if your dad speaking for God is saying you're bad, but God didn't make you bad. 37 years as a neonatal nurse, Sven, no children are born bad or believing, coming out of the womb saying, I suck.
Yeah.
That's right. That means a lie was implanted in you. That what you are living right now is not your native state. It's a lie that they implanted. And for as much as you love your parents, I have no doubt about it. To be very honest with you, fuck them. And I don't mean fuck them like, fuck you, I'm walking away. I mean, fuck them for teaching a child to hate themselves. Fuck you. Fuck you. And this is just bullshit. Who the fuck does that? Do you have kids, Reggie?
Yeah.
How many kids?
Yeah. Four.
Would you ever do anything deliberately with your words? Now, accidentally, that's one thing, and hopefully you'll atone for it, because every parent makes mistakes and has shit they have to atone for later, like when the kid is 30 or whatever. But would you ever deliberately do anything to teach that child that they are bad and unlovable?
It's my biggest fear, that I'll try to make them me instead of who they are.
Well, and you know what? And the mere fact that you even have those thoughts, and it sounds like there's a measure of deliberateness about it, about helping them become their authentic self. But the question was, would you ever do anything to teach them that they are hated by God, or that they are innately bad, or anything like that? Would you ever do that?
Fuck no.
Because why?
Because it's evil.
Right. What your parents did was, to use your word, evil. It was bad. It's like, don't do that to a child. I mean, and you certainly don't make your children fall in love with your fucking religion if you're teaching them they're fucking evil. What's the logic there? And so what you're left with in the end, well, there is that great line from Christian scripture that where, you know, the teacher Jesus turns to some of his disciples and he says, well, what do people say that I am? They say blah, blah, blah. And Jesus says, yeah, but what do you believe? So I'm going to ask you that right now about you. What do you truly, truly believe? More specifically, I'm going to ask it this way. And now we're not just talking at a theoretical level, but what you feel, what you believe. What percent do you genuinely love you? Like who you are? Like I do love me. What percent do you love you? And what percent of you do you not love? Are you tearing up a little bit? Be honest.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's just pause right there. That's beautiful, man. And you guys can't see Reggie, but I mean, he's a tough looking dude. All right. And so to see you tearing up a bit, it's powerful. I want to ask you, what's going on inside of you right now? I ask you, what percent of you do you love? What percent do you love you? And you start to tear up. What are you feeling right now?
Hearing, teaching a kid that they're hated is evil. That is really what I believe.
And how do you feel? Answer this question first, though. What do you feel? What are you feeling when those tears are coming? When I ask you how much you love you, and I said this stuff right before it, what feeling? Give me a feeling word. Mad, sad, bad, glad, frustrated, excited, exuberant, elated, melancholy, blue, disdain. Give me a feeling word that you feel when I say that, when I asked you that.
Relief.
Wow. Now explain that. Relief over what? You were starting an explanation. What's the relief?
I do love me. People don't. That hurts. But I love me. And to hear it put as evil, it's a hard thing to look at.
Because it was coming from your parents?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
There was nothing wrong with you, but they taught you that there was. And it's hard to look at the notion that these people who I love and who claimed to love me taught me that I was evil, taught me that God hated me. It's hard to look at the truth. Is that somewhat accurate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it flips the tables, flips the script.
There was never anything wrong with you. You were a kid. You were rambunctious. You were snotty. You were cute. You were funny. You were playful. You'd get ornery when you were hungry or tired. You were a fucking child. That's what all children are. You were beautiful. And they taught you something very different. Now, I don't doubt that your parents have many wonderful things about them. I don't doubt that. You said you love them. I don't doubt that. Okay? But there's this piece that they taught you to hate yourself. And the truth is, the more you begin to reduce, whether it's them or not, is not what I'm looking at here. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. reduce the amount of people in your life who think lowly of you. It's you. That is a statement that is, by you cutting out or reducing people in your life who think lowly of you, you are basically, that's a statement of self-worth. No, I believe I am good. And it's okay if you don't like me, Susie or Jenny, or you're dating Brittany or whatever. It's okay if you don't like me. That's okay. Not everybody's going to like me. Not everybody's going to like you, whatever. That's okay. And by you being okay with that and walking away rather than clinging, and I've done this. What you're laying out, I did this. I lived this shit. I get it. But by my clinging and holding on, wanting them, desperately wanting them to like me to confirm my worth, I am fundamentally stating my lack of worth because I need you to confirm it. Versus, it's okay if you don't like me. There are a lot of people that don't like me, Reggie. And there are going to be people who don't like you. And there are going to be people that the more you have the courage to become your authentic self, there are going to be more and more people that just fall in love with who you are. Friends, coworkers, girl, woman. And you'll be a better parent to your child, children, because you finally love you. And this relief that you're feeling is, whoa, it's not my fault. I wasn't bad. Is that somewhat accurate?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are you feeling right now, Reggie?
Tired.
Exactly. Exactly. Imagine doing 6 hours with me, as most of my first session clients do. Oh, yeah. It's a, you talk about violence in the ring and then getting your ass handed to you in the ring, right? But that, so tired, yeah. This you've just been faced with one of the most massive realizations of your entire fucking life. And the truth will punch you in the fucking kisser like nothing else.
I'd rather get punched by a fist.
I wouldn't do it because I know you'd punch back and you look like a tough dude. Reggie, I want you to know that I'm sending you love, brother, but you got to journal about all this shit. And I would strongly recommend that you write a letter to your parents, but don't send it, because if you don't send it, you're more likely to flush it all out. And the point at which you allow yourself to bring up all the feelings, even the ugly ones that you don't want to see, including the anger, maybe hate, maybe rage. And remember, feelings don't last forever. We just bring them up and allow them to pass and allow them to pass. Maybe it'll stay for a day, a month, a year, 2 years, 4 years, whatever. But all feelings pass. Just like the high after a victory, it eventually passes. So does every other feeling. But it's when we block them or don't let them come in, that's when they get packed up inside. I would invite you to stay to the end of the show, but I know you also probably have children and you know, beds that need to be made and baths that need to be taken and stinky kids running around with dirty butts. Reggie, it's been great having you on the show, and I hope you'll stay in touch with the show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for coming
really
on,
Reggie.
Appreciate it. All right. And we will be right back after this short break.
Now here's one of Sven's clients talking about his experience with badass counseling.
What I wanted to be able to get to across to other people is just how much you're able to deep dive into what's been going on in my life and help me figure out where and what caused that to help me solve and find those problems in my life to change where I'm going forward. None of the other therapists I went to with that, they try and help me figure out some other issues that may or may not be coming up, whereas you're able to dig down, find the core of what's going on. And I haven't been able to find that before. Just want to get more people aware of where you can go to in case you want your own therapy. And getting the hole in my love cup was one of the things that changed my life.
This show provides soul counseling intended to entertain and inform and is not medical advice. Now, back to the badass.
Welcome back, badasses. It's great to have you here. What a interesting, intense episode portion there with Reggie. That was great. Rob, we have a second guest on with an equally fascinating story. Tell us about Allison, please.
Okay, Allison wrote in and said, I'm 25 years old and thought I had made significant progress toward healing from a childhood of neglect, systematic isolation, and emotional abuse. When my son was born, I thought it might help me forgive my mother, who I believed was a victim in her own way. Instead, I came to learn my whole reality was a lie fabricated by her. On top of having my world and sense of self shattered, I've become trapped by debilitating anger and loneliness. I'm scared to death that I'm going to irreparably damage my son if I can't put myself back together. I just want to heal the emotional wounds so I can be the mom he deserves.
Allison, great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Great. Good to have you here. Well, let's just dive right in, okay? I'm most curious about a few things. One, you said, I thought it might help forgive my mother, you know, when your son was born, and who was her own victim in her own way. Instead, I came to learn my whole reality was a lie fabricated by her. How did you learn this, and what's the lie?
So I learned this because after my son was born, I call it the parade of family, right? Relatives came to visit the baby. And so it was kind of an opportunity that I had never really had in my life as an adult to visit with some of these family members and have conversations with them away from my parents. And so just through those conversations with mainly my two grandmothers, I came to find out that a lot of the things that I believed or had just accepted as part of the family narrative were completely false. And I also found out about some lies that were being told about me. And that realization made me realize a whole bunch of other things were probably lies too. So it was kind of the big blowing up of everything that I thought I knew.
And everything you thought you knew as taught to you by your mother, presumably?
Mainly, yes.
Okay. And what was the biggest lie of all the stuff that grandma's taught and told? What was the biggest lie? And then what was the thing that was being perpetuated about you?
It wasn't really any one thing. It was more, it kind of goes to what I mentioned in the intro about isolation. It's more just like anyone that could have possibly intervened or been a support system, there were lies told about them to distance them, push them out of the family. So basically any opportunity I had to grasp for help was taken from me without me realizing that it was all manipulation. It wasn't true.
Gotcha. And so let me ask you this, what above all else, from your perspective, okay, because no one knows your life like you do, from your perspective, what really was the worst part of your childhood that no one was able to save you from?
I think really the isolation, because there was nobody to counter all of the messages and the manipulation and the lies. I was just there fending for myself.
And what were the what was the biggest message above all else that you were being taught?
About myself,
yeah.
That I wasn't good enough. I kind of had the privilege of being the golden child and the disappointment at the same time. So, you know, to the outside world, it was, oh, our daughter's perfect. Oh, she's better than your kid, smarter than your kid. And all this pressure to achieve. But then at home, it's like, you'll never be good enough. You're weird. You're a loser. You'll never have friends. Nobody likes you. You can't do anything right.
Wow. And just so you picked some very specific words, weird and loser and nobody likes you, which seems to imply those words were actually used. Those were the actual words, or that was just sort of the message you got?
I would say more the message I got.
A lot
of the messaging at home was sarcasm. So if I would bring up something I was interested in, it would be like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's cool.
Wow.
You know, so
wow.
I got the message like, oh, that's not cool at all. Like, that's weird.
And so let me ask you then, at age 25, you said you are now, how much do you still have that voice inside your head? Like that self-doubting voice, that self-antagonizing voice, this voice inside of you that attacks you every time you have a new idea or are considering something or might try this. Do you have a voice inside of you attacking you?
Oh, constantly. And it bugs the crap out of me because I know exactly why it's there and who put it there, but I still can't seem to beat it out of my head.
Well, why is it there and who put it there?
Mom put it there. And I think it just all played into my mom had to control. I have one brother, and it was always everything was about controlling my brother and I, having total control. So she isolated us so she could control. She manipulated us so she could control.
And
she wanted us to love her. And it was all about controlling that.
Okay. And I was wondering where that was going, that the control then is not just about, well, I want you to love me and give all your love to me. You exist to pour love into my love cup.
Absolutely.
It's not the other way around. So correct. I'm going to control. I'm not going to let you be with anyone else. Just keep giving love. It's funny. I was with a woman for a few years, and I remember she made the comment, I want to have kids someday so that I can have someone who will love me forever. Yeesh. Not good. Because those kids don't exist for that purpose. But in that control, it's not just to get the love from you per se, but it's the fear of not getting it. Control is always driven by fear. Fear of something happening, fear of something not happening. And as you yourself stated. But what's fascinating was when my son was born, I thought it might help me forgive my mother. So how old were you when your son was born?
He was born 6 months ago. So okay.
You were 20, same age. 25, fair enough. And you thought it would help me forgive my mother. Okay, so, but this was before you had the grandma's talk and the talk with extended relatives. So what you were forgiving her for, so you were already cognizant of how mom had raised you. Before you got learned all the big lies and all the crap from your grandmothers, you were already angry at her, hurt by her for how she raised you. And you thought the birth of your son would help you forgive her. And I know it's going to sound like a dumb question. That's okay. I had a professor in graduate school. He said, there are no dumb questions, just dumb people. So I'm a dumb person. And so the question is this, why did you want to forgive your mother?
You know, I think maybe forgive isn't the right word. I think maybe have empathy for is more what I meant.
So I'm clear then, when I have my son, I think that's going to help me have more empathy for my mom, who, as you state in your paragraph, who I believed was a victim in her own way. So if I have my own son, then I'll be able to have empathy for her, which implies that prior to that, you really didn't have empathy for her. You had strong feelings basically against her, dislike of her or anger at her, that sort of thing. But you wanted to have empathy for her. Why?
I believe that she deserves the chance to be a good grandmother if she wants to be there for my son.
Okay, just out of curiosity, why does she quote unquote deserve the chance? I'm just wanting to understand.
Because I didn't have a relationship with all of my grandparents, and a lot of it was family politics and drama. Mm-hmm. And so I just felt like for me as a kid, I always felt like, oh, well, why doesn't this grandparent come around? Oh, why didn't I get to know this one? So I feel like if she wants to be a good grandmother and she's going to be a better grandmother than she was a parent, then it's more for my son than it is for her. He deserves to have a relationship with his grandmother.
If she's going to be a good influence on your son, which up to that point, you had no way of knowing if she would. In fact, you had every reason to believe she wouldn't be because of how she raised you and your brother.
Right. So I was ready to cut her off at a moment's notice because I'm not going to let her hurt my son the way she hurt me.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, that's reasonable. But what's fascinating is I wanted to have empathy for my mother. In other words, to sort of feel her pain, to understand her. And so at 25, to have empathy, to feel her pain with her and be understanding of her. So at 25, you're now doing to yourself what your mom did to you your entire life, making her feelings more important than your feelings.
That's true.
Right. And what's fascinating is that you go on to talk about, you know, you discover the lie that's fabricated and now you have debilitating anger and so forth. Yeah, of course you do, because your whole life, your feelings didn't fucking matter. All that matters were mom's feelings. And you confirmed that at 25, I want to be able to have empathy for her. How about empathy for you? How about we go inside and we actually allow your authentic feelings to come up and come out? You don't ever have to say word one to your mom. I can heal you whether you say shit to her or not. You are conditioned to stuff your feelings down. I know for a fact that your baby, your son, cries, right?
Yeah.
Probably laughs. Is he laughing yet?
Yeah, he is.
and he gurgles when his tummy's upset or he gets ornery or cranky. And he's expressing what? He's feeling things. Children naturally express, push out feelings. Ah! That's a pushing out of a feeling. Laughter, it's a pushing out of a feeling. Expressing, pushing out. And yet, you're not pushing out your feelings. Your feelings, the anger, which you yourself mentioned, and that's just one. Your anger is just inside you. You're not getting it out. deliberately, actively getting out. And I'm not saying at her. You don't have changed one thing with regard to your relationship with your mother, but you continue to stuff those fucking feelings down. And you want to know why? Because you were taught as a child, you don't get to have fucking feelings. You exist to give me love. Now, does that sound accurate? Not accurate? What?
100% accurate. 100%.
Right. And so let me ask you this question then. When you discovered the whole reality that you were raised in was a fucking lie, what did you feel? How does it feel to think about that?
It made me angry. I was pissed. I was pissed off because I realized that there was never any hope for me from the beginning. There was nobody that was going to save me ever. And here I was, a little kid, basically like being a parent and not being allowed to feel anything and not being allowed to, you know, do things or go places or see people. I was just completely alone.
And
it just pisses me off because now I'm an adult, right? And now it's my responsibility to heal myself. And it's like, I shouldn't have to do this. And nobody should, but I know I'm not the only one in this boat.
Right. Two questions. One, what is the single biggest crime that your mother committed against you? Whether it was one thing she did one time, or whether it was an ongoing act, or a way she made you feel, or what, it can be anything. What really is the crime that your mother committed against you in one sentence or less?
She made me feel so small, like I almost didn't even exist.
And as a result of feeling so small, like you don't even exist, how do you see yourself?
You know, that's a funny question, because it's like now that I'm out from under her, I've still got so much of her voice in me that I don't even know who I am.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is why when people say, oh, I'm just waiting for my, you know, elderly father to pass away so I can finally be free, I'm like, oh no.
It doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't. No, there can be some sense of liberation, but those voices are still in there, right? There's so much of her voice still in you. All right. Was your mom a single mom in the raising of you two kids?
Not exactly. No, she divorced my dad when I was 14, but dad wasn't around a whole lot. His coping mechanism for escaping the house was working. So he worked long hours and was not really home much ever. Okay.
His coping mechanism for escaping the house, which implies he wanted to get the fuck out of there just as badly as you did.
No, she made us all miserable.
Okay. Now, I don't know where you're from. I hear a little bit of an accent there, so I'm going to guess somewhere down south. Beautiful. Love the southern states myself. I know that cop cars down in the south, as in the north, and I'm from the far north, Minnesota. You know, we all know what it says on the side of a cop car, to do this and to do this. What do...
Serve and protect.
That's right. Protect and serve. That's exactly right. And largely, parenting can be boiled down to the same thing, to a large degree, you know, more or less, right? Serve the child, help them feel loved and appreciated and to teach them how to study and make them do chores, things like that. But to protect. And not just roof over your head, clothes on your back, you know, and, you know, keep the wolves away and keep the boys from touching my daughter's boobie or whatever. Not just protecting that way, but also protecting the emotional stability and self-love of my children. Just off the top of your head, what percent, and only you can answer this, no one can answer it for you, what percent was your mom a good parent and what percent was your mom a bad parent?
Oh, I really want to say 0% a good parent.
Fair enough. You can say whatever the hell you want. You are my guest, my show. You say whatever you want. So we're going to say 0% good, 100% bad. And as long as we're on the subject, what percent was your dad a good parent? What percent was your dad a bad parent?
I'll say 50-50, because when he was around, you know, we had good times. We had laughs. It's just he wasn't really around a whole lot.
When he was around, we had good times and laughs. Okay. Just out of curiosity, how old is your father and mother?
Both my parents are 52, 53.
All right. So just a few years younger than me. All right. Forgive me for asking this question. All right. But I'm going to make it graphic. Your son is now 5 years old. I know he was just born, so it may be hard to imagine. But your son is 5 years old and he's in kindergarten. And... You're going to pick him up, but you're a little bit late. And when you get there, you see that there's another mom of one of the other parents, and the mom is, forgive me, all right? The mom is slapping your child. And the principal, we'll just say it's a man, forgive me if that's stereotypes. God. Anyway, and the man, principal is just standing there watching her. Or let's say it's her, you know, another parent, man, standing there watching her. In that moment, of course, you rush over and you say, you know, you rage on the woman hitting her and whatever. But let me ask you this. In your estimation, who's committing the greater crime? The parent hitting the child or the parent allowing the child to be hit?
You know, I think it's close, but I'm still going to say the parent hitting the child.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Everybody answers it differently. There's no right or wrong answer. But it's close, you said. It's close. Okay. And yet, in your estimation of your parents' parenting, you said your mom was 0% a good parent, but you say your dad was 50%. That's not close. See, he stood by. In fact, he stood by and he watched your mother emotionally abuse you. He stood by and watched your mother isolate. In fact, he went one step worse than standing by and watching. He didn't even stand by. He said, fuck this shit. I'm protecting myself. You said everybody in our home was miserable. My brother, me, my dad. Dad had agency. Dad had power. Dad had a C-A-R car. He had a car and he got the fuck out of there, didn't he? So he protected himself. Protect and serve. He did not protect, did not serve. Your grandma's even said, dude, we were cut the fuck off. You know, and aunties, uncles, whatever, no way would she let us anywhere near. But this is the father. He has just as much right to parent those kids as the mother. Just as much right. And he said, nah, whoo, fuck it, it's getting late. I'm out of here. I'm going to stay at work. Honey, I'm going to be late. I'll be home about 10. I may stop at the bar, though, at about 5. Spend 5 hours there. Point is this. If it really is close that the parent standing by watching the evil be done or the bad be done, let alone the one that turns his back and walks away to protect himself, if it's close, then the feelings towards dad, those are the ones buried even deeper. And the shitty part about that is, cripes, that means I've been alone the whole time. Means I didn't have parents. The real lie is that you actually had parents. Now, that may sound a bit harsh, but think about that. The one person whose fucking job it was to protect you, if the other person's being bad and putting you in harm's way, it was his job to put himself in front of that hail of bullets, and he didn't. He protected himself and said, you go ahead, kiddo. You go ahead. You take those bullets. Now, for you personally, what do you think of a man that does that? Or a person?
Not much of a man.
So what might be an adjective to describe him?
Coward.
Coward. Okay.
Selfish.
Selfish. Yep. What does it feel like to think of your father, the one who you thought was 50% a good parent, to think of him as a coward and selfish and that he protected himself at the expense of the daughter and son that it was his job to protect?
This is something that I've kind of been realizing lately. I just hadn't thought of it in terms of percentages, but I've been toying around with that question a lot. And I don't know. I was angry with my dad for a long time. In fact, I didn't even talk to him at all. Mm-hmm. But it's like not excusing his behavior because obviously he failed at his like one main job. But I'm just realizing like the totality of everything my mom did. Mm-hmm. It's like, I obviously he was aware of some of it, but I don't think he was aware of everything that my brother and I did.
And why do you think he was not aware?
Because he wasn't around and he didn't ask questions.
But wait a minute. And that makes sense, but let's back it up. Why would he be around less? You said looking for an escape. Why would he need to escape the house unless he was aware of what was going on in the house?
Because him and my mom had a very not great relationship, but I don't think he realized what was going on with us children while he was out of the house.
Why would he not realize that? If he knew how she was with him, why would he quote unquote not realize that?
because my mom is very good at being a chameleon. So she, when people are watching, she's mother of the year. Oh, I die for my children. My children are everything. Look at all the good things
to everyone else. To everyone else, but he is
including him.
But he knew enough that she was a fucking raging bitch to get out of the fucking house. So, but I'm going to take you at your word, and I want to ask you this question. I want to ask you this question. So, she, when he was around, she was a completely different person.
When he was around, she was not around very much.
Is it possible that a part of you doesn't want to accept the possibility or likelihood that your dad, it's not that he failed. He didn't try.
No, that's true. That's true. Absolutely.
Okay. How would you describe in one sentence or less precisely what you feel towards your mom?
Angry that she can make a child hate themselves and hate themselves so much that they lose touch with who they even are to begin with.
Right now, today, at this age, at 25, what percent do you hate yourself? If you were to be totally honest.
You know, I don't know how to answer that because I feel like I don't know who I am. I can say that I hate her voice swirling around in me and acting like the person that she,
but you just,
you know, wants me to be. But I don't know who I am.
But you just said, I hate myself so much that I don't even know who I am. So you said, I hate myself and I hate it so much. So you just say, so I was just trying to sort of get a clearer picture of that because you literally just admitted, I hate myself and I hate myself so much. So you said it twice and I'm just wanting a percentage.
Well, I guess I'll say 90%.
That's fair. That's a fair answer. Let me ask you this. In your entire life, that is a high answer, but let me ask you, in your entire life, what's the highest percentage you've ever hated yourself?
100%.
And what period was that? What period of your life, roughly?
I'll say from 10 to 16.
10 to 16,
But really around 12 is when it kicked up a notch.
Especially 12. All right, fair enough. Just out of curiosity, why 12? Why did it kick up a notch then? Why not 8? Why not 14?
So a theme in the house was always not being able to have feelings. And so anything you felt was invalidated. But it's like my mom always had to dig around for reasons that seemed legitimate to invalidate. But once I hit 12, I hit puberty. And then from then on, it was, oh, you're just being hormonal. Oh, you don't really think that. You're being hormonal. Oh, you're just acting that way because you're hormonal. So no matter what it was. So then I just hated that so much. And then I felt like no matter what I did, it was just, oh, it's just me being hormonal. Like, I just suck.
Right. I just suck. It's just me. Okay, so your self-hatred was at its peak at 100%, and in those roughly 10 years, it's come down to 90%. And one last one on that theme. What is the very earliest in your life that you recall hating yourself to any degree, to any percent?
It's so funny because the other day, I was actually just finally able to pinpoint a date, and it's when I was 7.
7.
7 years old.
And why then? What enables you to pinpoint that date? Why then?
So of all things, my dad had a lot of family photos on hard drives and he started uploading them to the cloud to share them with the family. Mm-hmm. And I started looking, they're all in chronological order. And I started looking back and I realized at a certain point, I went from looking like a happy, carefree, goofy kid to just looking like just the light was just extinguished in my soul. And from that point on, I never looked happy again. And when I looked at the date on the picture, it was 2005. I was 7 years old.
Wow.
You can see it right on my face.
And so why do you think, two questions. So what do you think the percentage of self-hatred was at 7? If that's the first time you felt it, what was the percentage?
I'll say 20%.
20%?
It was just beginning. And it was more fear and anxiety at
that
point. Fair
enough. And you said, so you could see these pictures and you saw the light was already out in your eyes and you had been taught you're not allowed to have feelings and your feelings were invalidated. So you had shut down your authentic self and your authentic feelings. Okay. And what's fascinating about you saying age 7? First of all, was there any certain event at age 7 or that's when it just sort of all built up and it finally happened?
There's nothing I can recall. I've asked around and nobody remembers anything.
Exactly. If 7 is when the lights are going out in your eyes, that means it's been building up. That it didn't just happen overnight. Oh, fuck. Now I'm fucking 7 and 2 months and lights out. I'm done. I'm not happy anymore. No, no, that shit. Those messages had already been going on for a year, 2 years, 4 years, likely from the beginning. And I mean, unless your mom underwent some massive character change and turned you into a fucking shithead, she had always been that. Right, exactly. So that had been happening since you were a child. And at age 7, it became too hard to be happy anymore, to put yourself out there. It was, and you just did what you had to do to stay alive. Okay, so just out of curiosity. So your self-hatred starts at 7, peaked out at 100% in your early to mid-teens and presently rests at 90%. Just out of curiosity, what percent today, as of right now, do you hate your mother? Specifically hate?
100%.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, what's the earliest you recall hating your mother?
Oh, gosh, probably around 10 years old.
Wow. And, you, the listeners don't get to see what I get to see right now. I see a beautiful little boy baby. Rob, come over here and look at this. Look at this little guy.
He was starting to cry.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Rob. Okay. See that little guy? Oh, yeah. What a sweetheart. Wow. Love babies. He has Carly, the studio cat, on his lap, and Carly's saying, no one's cuter than me. Just look at me.
No, you can't displace the studio cat.
That little tiger in your lap can. And so you hate your mom 100%, and you say it really started about 10 years old. And when is that sort of when the hormonal talk sort of kicked in, or was it just sort of like I'd grown sick of her bullshit by that time, or what was it?
I think it was kind of the beginning of me being over her bullshit and starting to kind of push back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, oh no, you're not going to push back against me.
What steps are you actively taking today with all of these feelings that you have? What steps are you actively taking, deliberately taking to get all of these feelings out of you?
I'm journaling, and I'm also currently trying to get into a therapist.
Good.
And my husband's also trying to get me in with a psychiatrist because I've just got so much going on. And he just thinks, he's a medical professional. So he's like, no, you should start there and just make sure there's nothing else going on. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I just need to get all this crap out.
Okay. And the truth is, it's okay for you to trust your own feelings and your own, do what you believe is best. But you know, it's nice to have people around that love and care about you and have advice such as your husband, but it's also okay for you to trust your own instincts and do what you need to do. But you've come to me to ask what I think. That's why you came to me. And I'm telling you absolutely unequivocally, you need to be flushing that shit out and not just journaling, but, writing letters to your mom that you don't send, and you've got to use the strongest language possible. Because that's what it means to really get in there and scour that pan. I fucking hate you 100%, Mom. You are literally 0% a good parent. I am literally using 0% of your parenting in the parenting of my son. That's what I think of your fucking parenting. You need to be journaling all that shit out. And it's going to be with you for a while, but the more you flush it out and keep flushing out, and yes, with a therapist. And the other thing is, there are groups. You can get into a women's support group or a childhood, emotional abuse group, plenty of those online. You can also go to NAMI.org, NAMI.org. But yeah, you will continue to be debilitated by that anger and the hate and the rage and the sadness and the loss. You will continue to unless you get that shit out. Now, let me ask you this question. You've been hating yourself since at least 7 years old, but we know it that the strong feelings of disliking yourself had started before that. She taught you to dislike yourself before that. So she was teaching a child to hate herself. But it's only been since age 10 that you've allowed yourself to hate her even a little bit. And allowing these feelings to come up and get out gets them out. So it's not debilitating you from within. But in light of this whole question of hate, it's odd that I'm going to ask the question I'm about to ask right now. And that's simply this. If you were to be totally honest.
That's a difficult question.
Well, that implies you want something.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But maybe just a little validation for once in my life, which I know I'll never get, but...
And if you got a little validation, if she said to you, if she called you up and said, you know, or she came over and was seeing her grandbaby and she turned to you and said, you know, you're really doing a good job with this baby. How would that feel?
Well, I know exactly how it feels because she does it, but it's in like a fake phony way. And so it just pisses me off more because ever since I became an adult, the switch has flipped. And now she acts like, oh, we're best friends. We've been best friends forever. Girl power, mommy and daughter against the world. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
If she gave you, if she complimented you on your parenting without the sarcastic tone, how would that feel or what would you think?
I think it would be meaningless because what do I want compliments on parenting from someone who clearly doesn't know how to parent?
What if she said to you a compliment on something else? What if she said, sweetheart, you really look pretty today? And she meant it. How would that feel?
I think I just hate her so much I couldn't accept any validation from her even if she gave it to me.
And yet you specifically said yourself, you still want validation from her. So you're wanting validation from someone you don't want validation from anymore. Someone it would probably, and I see this all the time, that when the father says that, you know, that when the son is 35, I'm really proud of you, son. And it just makes the son angry. Fuck you. Now?
Yeah.
At 35? Really? Fuck you. Where were you fucking 30 years ago saying that shit? Fuck you. And I basically asked you two different scenarios on your parenting and on your, you know, just looking pretty in that dress today or whatever. And in both cases, you got angry. So, yeah. And so in a way, you're still wanting something from her, but even if it came, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't want it because you do have that so much anger inside of her. But the real problem, in addition to needing to get all that rage out of you, the real problem is that you're still wanting validation, which means you don't validate yourself. You don't believe in yourself, that you're still needing it from an external power source, that the one person who has, one of two people who have invalidated you most in your entire life, your mother and your father invalidated you when he turned his back and walked away, protecting himself at the expense of you. And believe me, there's far more rage inside of you towards him. Trust me, it's there. No matter what you got out at him before, because this is a deeper issue than shit you might've been angry about before. But the bottom line is you were taught to hate yourself and you're still wanting validation from the person who you basically want her by you, her validating you in a real way and consistently and whatever. What you're really wanting is her to X out all those old messages. I was wrong, honey. It was cruel of me. I was bad. You're wanting her to wipe away all the invalidating messages. She's not going to do that. And you know that.
No.
Right. And so you've spent your whole life trying to get her validation. And the grief, the grieving, the sadness, in addition to all the anger, is knowing it's never going to come. And, but it also means that's also the freeing part because now I can finally live my life my way. But it's sad and it's grieving to know that I didn't have a mother. I had an ogre and I had a dad who was a fucking coward. So I want you to stick around till after the show, but I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's an intense story and it's one that a whole lot of people can identify with. And you were courageous to come on at 25 and I really applaud you for doing this work now, Allison. But you've got to be deliberate about every day flushing it and just keep flushing it and going deeper. And if it, have you read my book yet? Just out of curiosity, There's a Hole in My Love Cup.
I have. I'm on reading it for the second time.
Excellent.
Now.
Excellent. And doing the exercises and doing them in writing and stuff like, great. And keep going deeper with that. Great. Well, again, Allison, it's been great having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
Pleasure was ours. And to all of our listeners from as far away as Belgium, South Africa, and New Zealand, thank you so much for tuning in to yet another episode of the Badass Counseling Show. On behalf of Casey and Rob, have a kick-ass day.
The Badass Counseling Show is strictly copyrighted. No copies may be made without the express written consent of the Badass Counseling Show, LLC. The Badass Counseling Show is produced by Karen Camparelli and Robert H. Friedman. Executive producer, Sven Erlandson. Original music by two-time Emmy Award-winning composer Trevor Morris. Have a kick-ass day.